We've all heard of the concept of niching down or doubling down or making your channel be very specific about one topic. Well, today's guest on Cheap Talk is doing completely the opposite, and that managed to get their channel to over 5 million subscribers. So what is niching up and how can we apply that knowledge to our own channels? Well, that's what today's episode is all about. Let's do this.
Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
And welcome to another episode of Tube Talk. My name is Liron Segev. I am a tech blogger, a YouTuber, and the director of customer success here at vidIQ, where every day we help creators big and small level up their channels, get more subscribers, more views in less time. One thing I love about YouTube is how everyone has the opportunity to be great, make amazing content, build an amazing community, and have a very successful business. This is why I love diving into creators' journey. Where do they come from? Where are they going? Where are they now? And today we're doing exactly that. So today I am speaking with Devin Weber, the CEO of Braille Skateboarding. A channel from humble beginnings to a channel that now has over 5 million subscribers and even some physical products in retail stores, which is absolutely mind-blowingly amazing. What lessons can we all learn? What mistakes can we avoid? This is what today's episode is all about. So Devin, welcome to Tube Talk.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So Devin, very exciting. 5 million subscribers. Physical toys in retail stores. This is wow. Give us the quick overview of who is Braille Skateboarding.
Well, Braille Skateboarding originally was just Aaron Cairo. And he started the company way back in 2005 after he was kicked off his skate team in San Francisco due to them having budget cuts. And he had just spent, I don't know, last 4 months of his life intensely making the best video part he'd ever created. And he had all of this footage and now it had no home. And there was this crazy brand new platform called YouTube. And it was kind of the equivalent for skaters then of just throwing it in the garbage. So he figured, I have nothing to lose. I'm going to put it up on YouTube and see what happens. And for that time period, it kind of went viral and got 100,000 views.
What?
And he realized, wait a second, that's more people than would have seen it if I had gone the traditional route and if this had been issued by a skate shop as a VHS or a DVD.
Okay, so well, we're talking VHS, we're talking a long time ago.
Right?
So what year was this about?
Well, this was 2005, but believe it or not, some people still put out skate content on VHS.
Okay, and for those who don't know what it is, please Google VHS and your mind will be blown. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry, I was
Google,
interrupting.
I am old.
Yes.
VHS.
So at that stage, the traditional route to go with content was film it, make it professional, save it onto some media, but then sell it at a physical store. And YouTube was just bubbling up and becoming this online video platform, right?
Exactly. And especially in the skate industry, it's not just sell it in a physical store. You had to be part of that store's skate team or part of a brand skate team. It's very difficult as a skater to become known, get your work seen. You could literally be the best skater in the world. You could be better than Nyjah. And if you don't have a way for someone to see you, it doesn't matter. And before YouTube, that was a real issue. So Aaron kind of forged the path and he threw it up there. It got views, but YouTube wasn't even owned by Google yet, maybe? I don't know. We're talking like dinosaur age right now. And it wasn't making any money. And so he just kept on working several jobs, valet parking cars, skating whenever he could. And then a few years later, someone told him, like, hey, you know, you can make money on YouTube now. He was like, really? So then he went back to it and started dedicatedly putting up at least one video a week. And then that turned into three, and then that turned into five, and then that turned into a video a day. And wow. By 2012, he had actually made some money. And that's where I came in, because my background is accounting. And I've been friends with Aaron for a long time. In fact, he was a groomsman and I was a bridesmaid in a mutual friend's wedding. And he was sitting in the hotel lobby on his laptop. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, oh, well, I created this website and kids send in skate footage and I voice it over to help them with what they're doing wrong and why they can't learn their trick. And I was like, cool. You will never make any money from that. Good luck to you. So I was so wrong, just so wrong. And luckily he forgave me and he hired me anyway. Because in 2013, he was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to make like $20,000. I need help with accounting. I was like, oh, I got you. I'll charge you $25 an hour.
I can do that.
So that's how I started working for Aaron. And then with my finance background, and I've also managed companies before, I helped him kind of establish more of a framework of an actual company. And then we worked together on, great, what's the next step of our expansion? Now, what are we going to do? And then I did the YouTube certified courses and I started managing the channel and running Lance, who at that time was the filmer and editor. And the three of us would come up with video ideas. And this is very unknown, but a lot of like the crazy viral video ideas we've had on that channel were actually my ideas, but people don't know I exist, which is kind of cool.
Love it.
To be behind the scenes.
Pulling the strings, making it all happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And what kind of viral videos jump to mind when you say viral videos, and how many views will that have typically?
Well, the glass skateboard, this was not a Devin idea, sadly, but, this is definitely where we went from like 0 to 60. This is, we didn't even have 1 million subscribers yet. And a company sent us a skateboard made out of glass. They were a brand new trucks company, suspension trucks for a smoother ride. And this guy's dad is a glass artist. And when I say artist, I mean Coca-Cola hires him to maintain all of their amazing old stained glass in their facility in Atlanta. Like, he's incredible.
Wow.
So he made a glass skateboard for us. So Aaron and Lance are riding it around and Aaron's like, oh, let me drop in on it, and just completely smashes and he almost cuts his neck open on glass shards, and you know, 16 million views later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that really fueled the growth of the channel. And then we hit 1 million and all of our fans were like, you gotta skate the gold play button, because by then we had established a whole series of skating things that you would not associate with skateboarding. Like, let's take a full size door from Home Depot and put trucks on it and skate it at the skate park.
Because that's what you would do, obviously.
Of course. So we took that gold play button and put trucks on it and skated it at the skate park. And that was a whole nother
crazy
level. Yeah. So it was just kind of viral growth from there, but then always sticking to our roots. And what started the channel and what grew the channel was tutorials and teaching people the skateboard. So you can't totally deviate from that or else you're going to be in trouble. And I think that's one reason we've had continual success for 15 years is that despite anything, we're really true to the mission of inspiring and teaching people to skateboard.
Okay. Love that. So let's, I mean, there was a lot to unpack in there, and this is why we tend to spend hours chatting, because there's just so many things that I need to pick your brains on. But let's go back to what you said about sticking to your roots. So the beginning of the channels was about education. It was about teaching people how to do a better trick, how to land their trick. Is that was the mission of the channel originally?
Yes, because Aaron noticed there was a huge gap in the industry. the current, or at that time, current tutorials were professionals with a board saying, oh, to do an ollie, you just flip your board or you just step here. And there's no way that a kid is going to be able to do that. And he had to teach himself when he lived in Montana. There was no YouTube.
Right.
He was lucky to get his hands on a skate video. And he taught himself by watching those skate videos like 5 times a day. And he worked out a method for learning that he realized this is what's missing from this industry.
Beautiful.
And so he took what he learned and how he taught himself and created a whole system for teaching people called Skateboarding Made Simple, and really taking each skill and building upon that earlier skill. Because when anyone tries to skateboard, they just want to kickflip.
Right.
That's it. They just want to be like, cool, I got a board yesterday, I'm a kickflip today. No.
No,
you're not. and that's why most people quit, actually.
Yes.
Is because they don't know how to learn. They get frustrated, they get hurt, and that skateboard ends up in an attic or a garage or at a garage sale, and it's like really sad. But if you learn properly.
Yeah, absolutely. That, I think that's vital, because it's a couple of things. So firstly, Aaron saw a gap in the market where he typically, insert the I am old statement here. When you paused a VHS tape, it wasn't the best pausing that you could get. Everything was shaky. Everything was weird. So he must have been super frustrated trying to learn something and trying to break it down step by step by step. And nobody was doing it. So I love the fact that he took that and applied that methodology to his own content and really breaking it down in a way that somebody watching it doesn't go through that frustration. Superb, identified a gap and did something about that. I also love the fact that it's education, because a lot of times we hear that, well, education on YouTube doesn't work. Everybody wants to see amazing GoPro footage and, you know, it's all hot and sexy and that's great. But when it comes to education, doesn't really, really work. Well, can we agree that that's nonsense? Education on YouTube works really, really well, right?
Yeah, you just have to do it the correct way and actually teach someone. Education doesn't work if you're not actually achieving that goal.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Aaron then took all this, uploaded a whole bunch of stuff to YouTube, and then the channel really started to get some traction, started to get some fans, if I may call them at this stage. Do you remember how many subscribers you had before your first like really viral thing took off?
I do. We had about 450,000 subscribers before we uploaded the glass video, and that was in 2016. It took 11 years to get to 460,000 subscribers. And that's the story a lot of people don't hear. And
yes.
They just go, oh, overnight success,
yes.
5 million. Blah. Like, actually, this was 15 years of hard work, working 3 jobs, valet parking cars while filming on the weekend, you know.
And uploading a serious content schedule. Uploading, it started as once a week, then twice, then 3, then 5, then 7. It's lots and lots of work for very, very little reward back then, essentially.
Yeah. But, and even now you can start a channel and maybe it'll be a year, but it's still going to be a year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why Aaron always says it has to be something you're passionate about. And it has to be something you would do even if you knew you would never make money from it.
Okay. Let's just repeat that for the people at the back. So it's gotta be something that you're passionate about. Even if you'll never make money from it, you're still gonna do it anyway.
Exactly.
That is such a golden nugget. So many people get into YouTube in order to chase those views, chase the big bucks, then realize it's hard work. They're in fact in the wrong industry, something they're not passionate about because they don't really care about the topic. They were just doing it for the views. And that's when burnout becomes real, because you no longer want to wake up in the morning and make your next video. Okay.
Exactly.
So golden nuggets everywhere here, people. Golden nuggets.
Yeah. Because Aaron's going to wake up in the morning and want to skate and want to teach someone to skate, even if it's not being recorded, you know?
He was doing it regardless, essentially.
He was doing it regardless. And the secondary purpose of starting Braille and the channel was to create a heretofore non-existent revenue stream that was different from the normal way you earned income in the skate industry. Because the skate industry is super difficult to make money in.
Right.
And if you're not Shane O'Neill or Paul Rodriguez or Tony Hawk, you ain't making no money. it's just the sad truth of it. And even people who are Olympic level athletes who are probably going to the Olympics, they're struggling to pay the fees to go to the competitions to get qualified to be in the Olympics.
That's crazy.
No, so it is crazy.
It's all these super, super talented people literally around the world, which have no outlet to firstly show their skill, never mind make money. But that's when YouTube becomes a game changer.
Exactly. And for Aaron, it was a total game changer. And we were able to translate that into paying people to make content for us. All of our skaters on the channel, this is their career, you know? And I love that. And I love being able to tell someone, guess what? You can now make a living skateboarding without having to be sponsored by Nike. Like, it's just, it's so beautiful. And we also invite skaters on and have them film with us. We promote their Instagram. Like, we want to have a platform that is not the usual platform for people to get recognized in skateboarding. And I think YouTube as a whole has really done that. You have Andy Schrock with Revive.
Right.
John Hill is blowing up. Garrett Jenner. You have Chris Chan. All these different skaters who did not go the traditional route, who are now known because of YouTube.
Wow. And it takes skill and it takes time. And I think, to your point earlier, is that a lot of people do get really, really frustrated. From a consumer point of view, you're trying to learn the skill and you can't because you're trying to kickflip on day two. So you give that up. But if now you have this wonderful world of content, which you can access on your mobile phone whilst being in a skate park or being in your driveway, and then eventually learning to master level one to level two to level three, does that make them part of your big community then, essentially?
It does. And I think that's what's so beautiful about YouTube is there's the comment feature. There's the community tab. We can do polls. You know, we go in every single day and answer comments on our channel because it's so important to us for someone who's watching our video to know, hey, you didn't have to take 10 minutes of your day to watch some crazy people skating weird stuff. And we really appreciate that you took the time to watch this video. And we want you to know that we appreciate you.
So commenting is very important to you.
So important. We probably spend a few hours a day between the various skaters and myself and Aaron answering comments, which is kind of cool too, because you don't actually know who's answering your comment today.
Yes.
It could be Aaron himself answering your comment. And we do the same thing on Instagram. We answer all of our Facebook direct messages. I mean, hundreds a week, but it's worth it to be that in tune with our community and for them to know. And we get comments all the time like, oh my gosh, you answered me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like being recognized. It's make someone's day. It makes them even more loyal to your channel. They're going to be the first people to comment when you have your next video. Building a community is so, so critical, regardless of what your channel is about. You need to spend time connecting with your viewer. And guess what? Your viewer is actually going to inspire you to make your next viral video, your next content that they're going to love, because that you're now taking direction from what your audience actually wants to see. How much of that plays into your videos' ideas? Do you look at your huge?
Okay. Huge. We ask people for ideas all the time. And some of our best videos are from people's ideas, whether we ask them on the community tab. We love doing polls on the community tab, like of these series we do, which is your favorite? Be like, oh, this one has 80% of the views. We should probably do some more episodes on that. You know, like, duh. But then just individual ideas themselves. Like, nice. For Christmas, a kid was like, I want to see you guys make a skateboard made out of gingerbread. Boom. Done. We got you, kid.
That's great.
Then they love it, because then in the comment, they're like, this was my idea.
Absolutely.
And then I do want to say, from a, maybe this is mercenary, there's a genius to answering the comments too, because the kid gets a notification that you answered, mm-hmm. and they click it and it brings them back to the video.
Completely.
Wah, wah, wah. So from the technical nuts and bolts side,
no, it's great.
You're getting another chance to have them watch more of the video, to get more watch time for YouTube to see, hey, this channel gets engagement. Maybe I want to suggest their content more.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that is beautiful. And the pro ninja tip here as well is, I've seen a lot of people who simply comment to their audience and they go, thanks, or like, thanks for watching. Well, that's going to give you one engagement. But if you say, hey, thanks for watching, what was your favorite part? Guess what it does? They have to come back and they're going to watch some more of your content, because they have to tell you what their favorite part was. So you get even more watch time, even more engagement. And as Devin says, another opportunity for you to be in front of your audience. YouTube is all about marrying content with people who want to watch your stuff. And YouTube now recognizes that golden signals, and then goes and finds you even more people who are like this person. So great, great tip. Spend time with answering your community. That is absolutely superb. But Devin, it sounds like everything was just magical and everything simply worked right out of the gate. And instantly you got 5 million subscribers. I'm sure there was maybe one or two mistakes made along the way. Maybe. Anything you can share or give us advice? Do not do this. It was horrible.
Yes. My favorite example was when Lance was like, okay, they love us skating weird things. So he went to the grocery store and got a frozen pizza and skated that. And the comments just destroyed us. How dare you waste food? There's starving kids in Africa. Oh my God. We deleted the video. We never delete videos. But for some reason, that struck such a chord, and it was just so much hate for wasting food, that since then, we try to be really careful. And if we do any food skating videos, in the video, we donate to a food bank. Right. I'm just never going to experience that again.
Wow. But I mean, it hits home hard. Because you think you're doing the right thing, but you've got to remember that your audience is, firstly, from around the world. Not everybody's in the same position, be it financial or whatever. And you've got to have some sort of sensitivity. So that's a great warning sign for all of us, especially today when everything is hyper-connected, social media accessible. Mm-hmm. That stuff can actually destroy a channel. So that's a great red flag to be very aware of when you're planning out your content. Okay. Do not skate food. Got it.
Please don't waste food. You know, the other thing that we really got annihilated for was copying trends. And it's because we did it stupidly. Like, we've done it correctly. And then we've done it stupidly where we didn't turn it into, it didn't feel like a Braille video, and people are like, oh, you're just trying to go viral. You're selling out. You just want the views. And we realized, okay, this might work for Dude Perfect. This might be a good video for Carter Scherer. Right. This is not a video for Braille. Or if we want it to be a video for Braille, how do we make it feel like it's our brand? So a huge mistake is also just deciding, oh, well, this is popular on YouTube, I'll just copy it. Mm-hmm. Please don't, because you're not them. And they probably have those views in part because of who they are right. and the connection they've already built with their audience.
Okay, so you got to be true to yourself and you got to be true to your brand and don't go chasing those trends.
Right. I mean, you can be smart and you can go, oh, okay, $10,000 challenges are trending. So that's when we did correctly. And so we said, okay, well, let's have this team member who's famous for breaking everything he touches try and break open an indestructible safe within 20 minutes. And he used fire and sledgehammers and blah and couldn't get it open. That video did great, 1 million views in 48 hours because we took that trend
right.
and used something that felt authentic to our channel.
Okay, so as we kind of talking along here, we're not talking about 1 million views in 48 hours, which is like phenomenal. And this isn't the norm on YouTube. I mean, this you guys have got this unique formula. People love you and your community, and you're always gonna get those. If we rewind the clock a little bit before you hit those huge, huge numbers, any tips for kind of getting off the ground or any tips in order to understand a little bit of the audience? How much should we be experimenting on our channels in order to really push those views and give value back to our communities?
Well, it probably took Aaron several years of experimenting to see what worked. And then he hit on, okay, tutorials always work. And then he did the skate supports where kids would send in their footage and he would voice them over and post that video. But he didn't, you know, find success on that for probably 5 to 6 years. He tried to just do cool skate footage or this or that, and that failed. So it was really through that experimenting. So give yourself time, but put up enough, like he tried a whole year of cool footage, not just, well, one video failed, whatever. You know, you've got to give yourself enough time to see, will this build traction? And he saw within 6 months that the tutorials and the skate supports did build traction. You went, aha, okay, maybe I can do one cool skate footage video a week, one tutorial, and one skate support. And he found that perfect combination.
Okay, but it took him a long time with experimenting with different formats, different ideas, until the audience responded to something. So I suppose a message here is keep an eye on your analytics. Keep an eye on what's working and what isn't. Don't be afraid to experiment, but also don't be in a rush. Whereas people tell you, oh, I've tried 2 or 3 things, it didn't work.
Well, oh my gosh, I hate hearing that. Because it's usually they tried it once and I'm like, okay, do it 10 times.
There we go.
Then tell me it didn't work. And don't be afraid of that failure, because that failure might lead you to the biggest success you've ever had. Because now you've learned from that failure and you're willing to try something new. If you're scared to fail, you're never going to put yourself out there. And with YouTube, you kind of have to put yourself out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Front and center on camera.
Yeah, which is why I'm behind the scenes. Boys.
Yes, I still like that approach. But it's great. It's a great message. It's more of take your time. Experiment with lots of different stuff, but regardless of what your channel is, the same rules apply. Experiment, learn, adapt, improvise, overcome, as Bear Grylls likes to say. So,
I love that.
Understand what's working, make your changes, and just get better and better with every video until you find your niche. But then that brings me to the different question of how niche should you be? Should Braille have only done tutorials, or just by including other various edutainment kind of content, which is education and entertainment mixed together, did that actually kind of help propel the channel? Should we just do one thing, or do you think it's okay to do weird and wonderful stuff as long as it's related to the core of the channel? Does that make sense?
Totally. And I don't think we would have the current success we do if we hadn't done the weird and wacky stuff, because, and I'm going to say something slightly controversial.
Uh-oh.
A lot of people are like, niche down, niche down. And I'm like, let's niche up, you know, let's right. look and see what our core audience is, but realize that there's billions of people on this planet and each one has the potential to be your audience member. And that's what we did by, you know, skating an iPad, because someone searching for a tech video on iPad, that video comes up in the search results and they go, oh, I gotta watch this.
Smart.
We have had thousands of people tell us, I started skateboarding because I saw the video of you skating an iPad.
What? That's
they crazy. Would not, yeah, they would not have been our target audience, but because we niched up, which I think I'm going to trademark this.
I like that.
because we niched up, we caught a wider audience who then became a core fan base. And it's that Love whole it. Mix of the weird and crazy, capture the attention, get a wider audience, but stay true to your goal, stay true to your mission, and take those people you capture and teach them to skateboard too.
But what is great about this is that people who were not even interested in skateboarding did a quick search, saw this. What? There's no way they're going to skate that. I have to watch this. And then they get hooked onto the content. And then they look at more stuff on your channel and more. And guess what? YouTube then feeds them more of your wacky and wonderful videos. So you still have an audience that's maybe isn't into skateboarding right now per se, but they're into the entertainment and the value that you provide. So
exactly.
I love that idea. So niche in terms of understand your audience, understand your core value, understand what you're giving back. But again, going back to the experimentation, nothing wrong with niching up, trademarked, nothing wrong with niching up and understanding, hey, hold on, how can I make this content for a new audience? And maybe try to get different eyeballs on your content, and maybe you can convert them into your regular listeners. Okay, love that. I think that makes a lot of sense. And we definitely need to experiment to try it and see whether that works on our individual channels. It may
exactly.
work, it may not, but you're not gonna know until you try. So that is pretty cool.
Right, that's another part of like the whole experimentation. And then another key element is our channel is super brand and family friendly. We don't swear. Our jokes are pretty tame, and it serves us very well for the YouTube platform because, again, niching mm-hmm. up, anyone can enjoy our content. We have so many messages from dads who are like, hey, I'm 34 now. I haven't skated since college. You got me back into it, and I watch your videos with my 8-year-old son. I'm like, oh, I love that.
Yes.
Like, that just makes me so happy to hear.
And it's your core values again. You're just breaking, right. You're just living the reality that you want to be seeing out there, which is superb. I also love the fact that your content's evergreen. You're not jumping on certain topics. You're not basically saying, oh, this is trending in politics, so I've got to do something here with this. Because that's going to be here, and then it will disappear. Your right. videos from years ago are still relevant today as they were when they launched. Is that a specific strategy, or is this just something that you happen to be doing?
It is 100% a strategy. And when we look at our analytics, we probably do between 800,000 and 1 million views a day total on the channel. I'd wow. say 50% of those are from content that's older than 6 months.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. Hold on. Let's just do this slowly. So 50% of your traffic that you receive on your YouTube channel is older than 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay. That's massive. That's huge.
It is. And it serves us very well. And especially I will be looking through and I'll go, wait a second, that video that like crushed my heart because it only did 150,000 in the first 24 hours. Is that 2.1 million right now? What? Like there was this amazing video we did with this 8-year-old kid who's like a crazy good BMXer. And we flew him out to the Braille house and we did these videos with him and they did okay on like the opening 48 hours. But then I looked last week and every video with him is at over 2 million wow. views. And those videos were only posted back in February. And I was like, what?
What? Yeah.
What? But see, that's the example of the power of evergreen content.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, definitely. But and again, you just don't know. See, the thing is with TikTok or Instagram and or a lot of these other platforms, it's now for now. But once it disappears off your timeline, you're very rarely going to go all the way back to look for old content. Whereas YouTube, the content is just there. It's views when you're not expecting those views. So you just never know what's going to pop. And you never know that the effort that you're putting in today, how it's going to repay back later on. And talk about passive income. I mean, stuff that you did years ago is now bringing in those lovely AdSense anyway.
Yeah, so, we could literally stop making videos, which we're not going to do. But we could stop making videos and probably still make 75 to 80% of what we're earning right now.
See, and as much as people complain about YouTube, not many platforms give you that power.
No, not at all.
Okay, so the one thing about, well, I just want to pick up on that, the eight-year-old kid video, is that once you do a video, and it broke your heart because it didn't do so well starting out the gate, but then you got to let it go. There's nothing else you can do. You've done everything you can. You just got to focus on your next video and then your next video. And then you never know what's going to happen later on. But geez, the mistakes people make is that they're so invested in that one video that they watch it and refresh and refresh and refresh those analytics that they never actually get to make the next video and the next video. It's done. It's out there. It's live on YouTube. Whatever happens, happens.
Move on.
Cool.
Yeah. And Aaron has to tell me that sometimes, because sometimes it'll be my video idea and I kind of really take it personally. Yes. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like so out of touch. And then he'll be like, okay, chill out. Move on.
Yes.
And then I'll, like I said, I'll come back 6 months later and, oh, BMX kid has 2.1 million views. I guess I do know what I'm doing.
But you take it personally because it's like your responsibility. I brought this idea. It's almost like it's on you to make it good. But realistically, you don't have control over that anyway. Once it's live on YouTube, YouTube algorithms and whatever else takes over and it's going to do with it what it's going to do with it. Driving yourself insane is not going to help you or your channel.
Correct. And as Aaron likes to say, Devin, your self-worth is not dependent on our 48-hour view range. Oh, okay. Thank you for reminding me.
It sounds like you've heard this a couple of times.
Just a few. Yeah, because you can get super stressed out about it. Right. And it's like, this is your job and this is your livelihood. And you can like live and die by the analytics on your stupid phone, and you just shouldn't. Like, calm down. It's a game. It's a video.
There we go.
Take a walk.
Love that. But the one thing that we haven't touched on is the whole merchandise side of it and the physical stuff in stores. When did you know that your audience was ready for some good old merch and they wanted to be part of that? They wanted to hold something of yours. Was there like a defining moment, or did you decide, hey, let's experiment with merch since we're experimenting with everything else?
Well, we started making shirts, like, again, back in the dinosaur age in 2013. We had a few shirts, and Chloe was shipping them out of her bedroom. That's how small that operation was. And it really wasn't until we broke that 1 million subscriber mark that we saw the interest increase and we started to sell more shirts. And we're like, oh, maybe we should put some thought into the design on these things. And I'd say really only in the last year have we realized, okay, we're a legit brand now and people would want to skate our skateboards. And we made our own skateboards and they sold out in the first day of announcing them. We sold 400 skateboards in one day. And we're like, maybe I'm kind of proud of myself. You know, it was like a moment of like, wait, really? People want to buy this?
But it's now that you know that it worked, are you going to ramp that side up as well?
Absolutely. We are 100% ramping it up and we're definitely preparing more Braille branded items, especially to be ready for Christmas. And, you know, we just launched that toy line in Target. And again, that was a moment of like, is anyone going to buy these things? Yeah. Like, is there a market for this? And I'm a mom, I have a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old. And I had the idea of like, you know what? People love our weird boards. That's what has made our channel, is us skating the iPad and the flat screen TV and the surfboard. Why don't we make fingerboards of those and put them in blind bags and kids collect them? And apparently I knew what I was talking about.
Very good.
Yep. And they've just been selling like crazy, which again, so humbling, because huge fear, huge anxiety of like, okay, Target is stocking them in their stores. Is this going to be that embarrassing moment when no one buys them? No.
It wasn't.
We did it correctly. We did the right product. Because imagine if we had done like an Erin Cairo bobblehead. That probably would not have sold. So it was also knowing our audience.
Yes, yes.
And knowing what they might want. Because what you want is not necessarily the same as what they want to buy. So I think that I had the advantage of being a mom in that moment and knowing the price points that moms would be willing to pay.
Yes, yes.
And knowing the collectability aspect that kids would then tell their mom, but mom, right. I need this.
I need this.
Yes, it's not I want, it's I need. And that's what we wanted to drive, was that feeling of like, hey, I need this. And a mom going, oh, okay, a 2-pack is $7.99. I shall buy this for you, son.
Fantastic. So, Devin, this has been superb. Lots of great, great knowledge, lots of tips along the journey. Any final words of wisdom? If you could put something up on a billboard in Times Square or a tweet that the entire YouTube community will see, what would that message be?
Follow your passion. Believe in yourself. Don't give up. Stay authentic.
Love every single one of those. Devin, this has been great. If people want to find you or your channel, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, they can never find me, which is great.
unless they find you on a stage somewhere in the world speaking.
Right. You can hear me talk at VidCon about taxes.
That's randomly. Interesting.
but no, you can go to www.brailleskateboarding.com, or you can check out our YouTube channel, Braille Skateboarding.
And of course, guys, we're going to have all these links in the show notes, so you can tippity tap right now and go check out what they've been up to. Go look at the old videos. Go look at those thumbnails. Go look at those titles. It wasn't about that. It was about making good quality content that people wanted to see. And that's always been true to what Braille has done. And that is how they became super duper successful. Devin, thank you for spending lots of time with us on Tube Talk.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. And as always, I love talking to you.
Always fun. And for the rest of you guys still hanging out here, don't forget to smash that subscribe button in your favorite podcast application. Share this episode with at least one other creator that's perhaps maybe struggling, maybe lost their way, not passionate about what they're doing. Let them get some inspiration, and we'll catch you guys on the next episode of Tube Talk. Thanks for hanging out.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk, brought to you by VidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.